5 minutes later, a black Lincoln Continental limousine slithered through the west gate and stopped before the diplomatic entrance in the south portico of the White House. The press continued to pour out of the east gate, oblivious. Then the hearses arrived. There were three. They remained in the White House garage less than a dozen minutes, and then wound back out in a sedate line.
Three hearses. Three bodies.
The president, the first lady, and maybe Thresh Limburger.
Or the first daughter.
Pepsi dialed ANC again.
Greg, the vice president just went in, then three hearses left.
We're still reviewing the film. The other networks are still sorting out the shooting. They report the president has left for Andrews Air Force Base and Air Force One.
The hearse traffic has been coming in and out of the West Gate. I think we're the only ones to spot it. We own this story.
Hang on, Pepsi.
By my fingernails.
At the North Portico diplomatic entrance, the vice president of the United States was greeted by the White House usher.
What the hell is going on?
Come this way, sir.
The vice president allowed himself to be escorted to the Oval Office. He had been dining with his family when word came that his presence was urgently required at the White House. They were intercepted in the Oval Office reception area by the president's chief of staff.
ANC has just declared the president dead.
For the vice president of the United States, it was as if an anvil had landed on his head. A million hectic thoughts raced through his reeling brain. His vision actually dimmed. There was a roaring in his ears. Then the grim face of the president himself poked out of the Oval Office door.
Don't believe everything you see on TV. But for the foreseeable future, you're confined to the White House.
Well, what's going on, a coup?
We're trying to tree a possum.
Come again?
I'm dead, and you don't know any different. You got that?
A very confused and only slightly disappointed vice president of the United States nodded woodenly.
Yes, Mr. President.
Behind the closed doors of the Oval Office, the President of the United States faced Harold W. Smith.
Everything's in place.
We have only to wait.
I hate deceiving the American people like this.
Better that they temporarily mourn a living man than bury another dead president for all time.
You know, I ordered the Secret Service to stand down.
I know.
Yet they had snipers on every roof overlooking the place.
The director of the Secret Service, no doubt, considered it prudent.
Makes me wonder if those shots weren't meant to hit me.
That possibility cannot be discounted at this juncture.
With the announcement by ANC that the President of the United States had died in a helicopter crash, the other networks, predictably, followed suit. Within 20 minutes, everyone had declared the chief executive dead. There was no confirmation from the White House, no comment from the other branches of government. No one went into the executive mansion, and no one and nothing came out. For all intents and purposes, the White House became an informational black hole. National Transportation Safety Board teams cordoned off the destroyed helicopter, allowing no cameras within viewing range. The press held vigil into the late hours of the night, interviewing one another to fill airtime, and the nation held its breath. In the White House basement, Harold Smith monitored the ongoing news coverage out of the corner of one eye as he wrestled with the problem. His worn briefcase lay open on the desk before him, exposing the portable computer that was connected by phone lines to the great mainframes housed in the basement of Fulcroft Sanitarium. Smith had created a flowchart on his screen in an attempt to organize what was now a large and Byzantine sequence of events. The trouble was, the chart refused to flow. That there was a conspiracy was beyond any shred of doubt. Someone had set on the president a Lee Harvey Oswald double, perfect down to his fingerprints and body scars, armed with perfect replica Secret Service badge and vintage Mannlicher Carcano rifle, and had filmed it. That same someone had tricked an obscure bartender named Bud Coggins into gunning down the Oswald double in such a way that he too was killed in an eerie recreation of the original Oswald's murder. Coggins was not part of the conspiracy, that much was certain. Yet even as he was unwittingly covering up for the true conspirators, his VR helmet camera was transmitting pictures of everything he saw and did to the conspirators. That had been determined by an examination of the VR helmet. Within hours of the events in Boston, the conspiracy had already shifted into a second phase in Washington, D.C. The replica socks had infiltrated the White House grounds exactly in time to create chaos upon the president's return, and the replica Gila Gingold had struck by the end of day one. Yet all of these incidents seemed engineered to drive the president from Boston to the White House and then, in the final phase, trick him into boarding a booby-trapped helicopter and a fiery death. Why? Why not kill him in Boston and be done with it? What was the point of it all?
Yes?
This is the DC Medical Examiner.
Go ahead.
This man I have just autopsied is not Thrush Limburger. I know this because the actual Limburger is on my TV vociferously proclaiming his innocence.
Does he have a burr hole at the top of his head? The fake, I mean.
He does.
What is the likely significance of such procedures?
Typically, this is an operation used to cure Parkinson's disease by the introduction of fetal brain cells into an affected brain. It's called a brain graft.
I see. Are there any other applications?
Well, the only similar operation I have heard about involves trans-species applications, grafting animal brain cells from one species to another. It is purely experimental, but very interesting in that it shows behaviors and inherent instincts can be translocated across species.
Could animal brain cells be introduced into a human brain?
Only an unethical madman would attempt it.
You have not answered my question.
If the rejection problem could be solved, yes.
Am I correct in assuming that such operations would require sophisticated techniques and state-of-the-art surgical facilities?
You are.
Is there anything else?
The man was asthmatic. An inhaler was found on his person containing a cartridge of a common anti-inflammatory steroid called Vanceryl.
Are you certain it is Vanceryl?
That's what the cartridge says.
Messenger the cartridge to the FBI crime lab and have them compare it to a sample already in their hands. They should match.
At once.
Thank you. Yes?
FBI, we have no fingerprint match on the Boston shooter.
Unfortunate.
But the California driver's license found on the body checks out as authentic. His name really is Alec James Hiddell. We're trying to develop this information further.
Get back to me when you have something solid.
Smith faced his screen, frowning. The conspiracy was frightening in its rough outlines. From the surgical procedure to the clever replica of Marine One, a small fortune had been expended in setting up the president. But for what? And why had everything been filmed? Remo Williams poked his head in the door.
How's it coming?
This conspiracy, whatever it is, required a small fortune to mount and a small army to implement. How could they possibly engineer such an operation without leaks or defections? It makes no sense.
Speaking of making no sense, ANC says Pepsi Dobbins is about to go on the air and blow the whole thing wide open.
Pepsi Dobbins? She broke the story about the Mannlicher rifle, claiming a Secret Service source. I would like to know her source in the service.
I'd offer to squeeze the truth out of her, but thanks to Chun, we've been made as far as Pepsi is concerned.
I did no such thing.
The master of Shinanju floated into the room, looking stern.
I never mentioned the organization, O Emperor of Discernment.
I cannot help but think that the motive lies in the letters RX, which were scratched in the shell casing the Oswald replica fired.
But why would the conspirators try to claim credit for the ambush?
To strike fear into the hearts of their enemies. It is both obvious and logical.
No one in their right mind would dare claim responsibility. The retaliation would be massive. No. The true meaning of the letters RX must be to deflect suspicion away from the actual conspirators.
Toward what? The medical industry?
Toward the opponents of healthcare reform.
Like who? Gila Gingold and Thrush Limburger? No way, I don't buy it. Those guys were being framed.
It is a baffling conundrum. If only I could glean some meaning from the letters RX.
Upstairs in the White House family quarters, the President of the United States sat at a private desk, out of sight of the windows and prying camera lenses, doodling the letters RX on a sheet of presidential stationery. He tried reversing them, stacking them, but the letters continued to mock him with their cryptic insolvability.
Wish I could make some sense of all this.
You can start by explaining something to me.
The First Lady had just walked in.
What is it, honey?
Don't you honey me! I checked the federal staff directory. There is no committee on urban refugee empowerment.
Could we do this another time? I'm trying to solve a mystery.
You and your mysteries.
The First Lady looked over the president's shoulder.
What's that?
They found it scratched on the bullet casing up in Boston, but nobody can figure out what it's supposed to mean.
Maybe they're the initials of an old political rival.
Not likely. All anyone can come up with is that it's the medical symbol for the word prescription. What does that mean?
Maybe it's another synonym for prescription. You know, a logic chain sort of deal.
Good thinking.
The president began writing.
RX, prescription, remedy.
Cure! Cure is another word!
The president of the United States froze in his chair. Then his chief of staff called through the door.
ANC has a special report coming on. It looks important.
The first lady snatched up a remote and pointed it toward a bookcase TV set. The picture resolved itself into the serious figure of Pepsi Dobbins standing against a backdrop of the White House.
I thought the press was ordered to stay off Pennsylvania Avenue.
The president started for the nearest window when the first lady yanked him back.
You want your full head blown off?
This is Pepsi Dobbins, standing before the mausoleum-like nerve center of the nation's government. Not since the dark days of Houston has our nation
Dallas.
Not since Dallas has the nation cowered under a dark cloud as it has today. Unofficially, the President of the United States is dead. Unofficially, we have a new president. But no one in official Washington will speak on the record. In the absence of official facts, it is time the truth came out. 2 days ago, I broke the exclusive story, still unconfirmed by the Secret Service, that the rifle used to assassinate the president in Boston was identical to the weapon Lee Harvey Oswald slayed President slew President John Fitzsimmons Kennedy.
Oh, God.
ANC News can now report that the mastermind behind this conspiracy is this man.
A floating graphic appeared in one corner of the screen. It showed a bestubbled face under sunglasses and a black baseball cap with the letters CIA stitched across the front in red.
He calls himself Director X. And in an exclusive interview with me yesterday, this man claimed inside knowledge of the conspiracy. ANC News is prepared to state, on the record, that this man is the chief conspirator. And despite his clumsy attempts to suggest CIA involvement in the murder of this president, the finger of guilt points in another direction entirely. Director X is no less than the director of the United States Secret Service.
Did you hear that? She makes sense. Their fingerprints are all over this deal.
But the President of the United States was looking down at the sheet of paper in his trembling hands and a notation in his own handwriting that read, RX equals cure. And he remembered that the president who had founded CURE had himself been assassinated, that he himself had until the other day threatened to shut CURE down forever, and that the man who headed CURE was its director. In the basement command post of the White House, Harold W. Smith watched with growing interest as Pepsi Dobbins continued her indictment of the Presidential Protective Service.
This president was targeted because through his valiant attempts at healthcare reform, he became a threat to the establishment.
Wasn't that what that crazy guy who called Thrush Limburger said? The establishment was out to nail the president?
I told you so.
Shh.
I can now reveal the existence of a shadow government that has manipulated presidential strings going back an unknown number of administrations. Seeing they could not control the late president, they snuffed him out like a candle.
Harold Smith went pale. Remo turned to Chun.
You really blew it this time.
The master of Shinanju's mask of a face went stiff.
This group is known only by the code name RX, and it is headed by a shadowy figure known only as Smith.
Harold Smith rose from his seat, seeming to leave his blood in the chair. He went so pale.
I must speak with the president at once.
Good luck. I think we're both out of a job now.
The master of Shinanju said nothing. He was staring at the screen with eyes so slitted they might have been cut by a sharp blade. In the presidential suite of the Hay Adams Hotel, within sight of the White House, a man lay on the bed watching a TV through dark sunglasses. A blue LA Dodgers cap was cocked back off his forehead. Every flat surface in the room was stacked with black plastic videotapes. And in the corner, a red-brown capuchin monkey squatted on a parrot stand, staring out the window with inexpressibly sad eyes.
The significance of the initials RX remains murky, but it strongly suggests what some are calling the medical-industrial complex.
The man bolted upright.
That's my story! She stole my story! The bitch stole my story! Have my Porsche brought around to the front, and hurry!
Going to the bathroom, he quickly shaved the 2 days' growth of beard from his plump face, tossed the Dodgers cap into the trash, and replaced it with a black one emblazoned with the letters CIA. Selecting a pair of insect green mirrored sunglasses from a traveling case, he clapped them over his eyes and walked out of the room, belting an expensive top coat around his waist. The capuchin monkey on the parrot stand opened its small mouth. Mm. 10 minutes later, a blue Porsche pulled up before the Washington Bureau of ANC News. The man in the top coat and sunglasses approached the lobby guard.
Tell Pepsi Dobbins the director is here to see her.
She's doing a stand-up at the White House.
Don't give me that. I know a studio job when I see it.
Sorry.
Not as sorry as you're gonna be.
The man in the CIA cap pulled out a silenced .22 pistol and jammed it into the guard's blue paunch. In the White House, the President of the United States didn't know whom to believe. The frantic voice of the Director of the Secret Service coming from the telephone receiver, or Harold W. Smith's careful explanations.
We are not RX. I absolutely guarantee it.
The President hesitated. The Director of the Secret Service was all but screaming. He had no idea whom he was talking to. He had asked for the President and assumed he'd been put through to the former Vice President. The President hadn't spoken a single word through the one-sided conversation.
I swear this, on the memory of the President whom we both revere.
I'm willing to trust you, Smith, because I trust the judgment of that man. So who's behind this?
I hesitate to point the finger of guilt where I am not certain of all my facts.
I want to hear your ideas.
The mastermind has great financial and logistical resources. He also has unusual access to Secret Service procedures. He was obviously able to eavesdrop on their transmissions, so he could insert his own Marine One into the South Lawn ahead of the real one.
You blame rogue Secret Service agents?
At every incident, they were in the thick of it.
How does Pepsi Dobbins know so much?
I suspect she knows very little. She surmises much. We can sort that problem out later.
Smitty, I just had a flash.
Not now!
Listen a minute. Pepsi's talking about a Director X, right?
Yes?
That's what they call Uncle Sam Beasley, the director.
Are you saying Uncle Sam Beasley is behind the conspiracy?
You got a better theory?
For God's sake, why? What would his motive be?
Who knows? Maybe he thinks the new healthcare premiums will drive his theme parks out of business.
Smith rubbed his sharp chin thoughtfully.
It is conceivable. He does have the funds, manpower, and technology to accomplish everything we've thus far seen in this plot. But I cannot tell the president that. For one thing, we allowed Beasley to escape from Folcroft detention. For another, he would scarcely believe that a famous animator considered dead for 30 years is trying to kill him.
Why don't Chun and I try to shake some leads out of Pepsi Dobbins? What do we have to lose? We're practically out on the street as it is.
Whatever you do, don't let yourself be filmed.
Smith closed the door and straightened his tie and his crestfallen face before turning to the President of the United States.
Mr. President, we may have to revise our working theories.
The President looked skeptical in the extreme. Outside the White House, Remo and Chun looked up and down Pennsylvania Avenue.
I don't see Pepsi.
Nor do I.
Remo spotted an ANC microwave van parked on Jackson Place beside Lafayette Park and ran to it. The rear door was unlocked.
Where's Pepsi Dobbins?
Back at the studio.
But she's broadcasting live from the White House lawn.
What can I say? She's an amazing reporter.
I get it. Come on, little father, let's snag a cab. Pepsi's up to her old tricks again.
Inside ANC headquarters, Pepsi Dobbins was winding up her live report from the White House.
Stay with ANC News for more on this breaking story. This is Pepsi Dobbins, live from the White House.
The red light winked off, and Pepsi removed her IFP earpiece, carefully unpinning a lapel mic from her green Carolyn Rome dress.
How'd I do?
Well, except for getting Dallas and Houston mixed up, not to mention screwing up Kennedy's middle name, I'd say you did fine.
No one pays attention to facts, just hair and delivery.
You'd better hope they don't pay attention to backdrops either.
What are you talking about?
Because the White House slide they threw up behind you is a little out of date.
What do you mean?
No Christmas tree on the lawn.
I don't think anyone will notice.
You didn't see that tree.
Buck followed Pepsi through the cramped, cable-strewn corridors of the ANC Washington News Bureau.
I wouldn't have to electronically enhance my reports if the White House hadn't blocked off Pennsylvania Avenue.
A man in a black CIA baseball cap and mirror sunglasses stepped out of the men's room.
You know too much, Pepsi Dobbins.
Pepsi whirled. She saw the cap and the sunglasses before she noticed the gun. Buck Featherstone stepped between them. Buck dropped at her feet, his mouth bubbling blood like a dying drinking fountain. His eyes were wide and full of disbelief.
But you're my hero.
Tough.
The man in the CIA cap lifted his silenced .22 and took aim at the notch between Pepsi Dobbins' stunned blue eyes. Pepsi assumed she was shot. Her legs gave way, corkscrewing her to the floor. She was grabbed up, thrown across a soft, fleshy shoulder, and carried out of the building. No one stopped them. No one dared. Pepsi was dumped into the trunk of a blue car, and by the time her brain unblocked, the car was roaring from the curb, and she found herself inhaling carbon monoxide fumes coming from a faulty exhaust connection. The cab driver was wrestling with the traffic at DuPont Circle. Remo and Chun were in the back seat.
I myself hold that it was a joint Cuban intelligence Sicilian mafia hit.
Mind paying attention to your driving?
I can drive and talk fine. Like I was saying,
A single ivory fingernail flicked out to depress a spot over the driver's neck vertebrae, and the driver continued moving his mouth, but nothing came out.
Thank you, little father.
A metallic blue Porsche came squealing around a corner, and the cab driver evaded it by the width of a paint job. Remo caught a fleeting glimpse of the driver. His eyes had gone to the white letter CIA on the black baseball cap, so the face beneath made only a fleeting impression.
You know, that guy looked familiar.
Yes?
If I didn't know better, I'd swear that was Hardy Bricker.
Who is Hardy Bricker?
You know, the paranoid film director. The one that made that movie a few years ago about the Kennedy assassination that claimed a government conspiracy of about 22,000 people was behind it all.
I did not see that movie.
It was called CIA.
Uh-oh.
What is it, Remo? Speak!
We may have to rethink the Sam Beasley angle on this.
Then the cab came to a screeching halt in front of the ANC News Washington Bureau. The rear doors popped on either side, and Remo and Chun came flying out. They found a security guard lying dead in the entry, and mass confusion farther back. And amid the confusion, a man lay dying. Three cameramen with mini-cams on their shoulders were carefully recording his last painful minutes while a reporter held a microphone to the man's bloodied lips.
What's it like to die senselessly?
The reporter came close to finding out when Remo lifted him off his knees by his neck and flung him into the men's room. Remo held the door open while the master of Shinanju sent the three cameramen scurrying past, impelled by fingernails that found sensitive nerves in their bodies. Remo smacked the lock, and there was no exiting the men's room short of a blowtorch. Then he knelt beside the dying man.
This is a guy who was with Pepsi at the airport. Speak up, fella. What happened here?
Pepsi killed that Bricker, my hero.
Then his head rolled to one side, and the blood flowed out of his mouth like red Karo syrup from a bottle.
That was Hardy Bricker. We gotta find him.
Chun eyed his pupil suspiciously.
What is Hardy Bricker to you, Remo?
I'll explain later. Let's borrow a car. How many blue Porsches can there be running around Washington, D.C.?
The police were arriving as they exited the building. Since they left their prowl cars unlocked, Remo availed himself of one. Pulling away, Remo picked up the dash mic.
All units, attention all units. Be on the lookout for a metallic blue Porsche.
After a minute, the dispatcher hailed him.
Suspect Porsche seen crossing Memorial Bridge in Arlington.
License plate?
Charlie Ida Adam, repeat.
Charlie, Ida, Adam.
That's not the one. Keep looking. We've got them all to ourselves. When the trunk door opened, Pepsi Dobbins poked her sassy shag out into the sunlight and gulped cool, reviving oxygen like a beached grouper. A hand grabbed her by the hair, hauled her across several yards of well-tended grass to a circular terrace overlooking Memorial Bridge and the Potomac River. The Lincoln Memorial lay at the other end of the bridge. She was thrown to the ground. Pepsi looked up. Before her, set on a fieldstone platform, a gas flame burned orange and pure. On a marble tablet set in the slab was carved a name, John Fitzgerald Kennedy, 1917 to 1963.
I told you that what is past is prologue.
Pepsi tried to struggle to her feet, but a foot pressing against the small of her back kept her down.
Who? What?
When? Where? How? Maybe this will answer your questions.
And a ream of paper bound in a black laminated folder landed by her hand. Through a rectangular window cut in the cover, the top sheet showed white. On it was typewritten, Cure, a film by Hardy Bricker. Pepsi Dobbins looked over her shoulder and saw the man in the black CIA baseball cap. He had shaved his puffy cheeks. He removed his sunglasses. The name and face immediately connected.
You're Hardy Bricker!
Bricker smiled thinly.
I told you the script had been written, and now you're part of the picture. Why did you have to spill my storyline all over the place?
Storyline?
Damn it, I needed you to supply me tape. Now Cure is gonna have to silence you, too.
What's Cure?
The real name for the Black Assassin operation I have been calling RX.
Why not call it Cure?
Because someone might steal the title. Besides, I didn't want Smith to send his thick-wristed assassin after me during shooting.
You mean shooting or filming shooting?
I mean both. Since you know about Smith, you must also know about Cure and the assassin with the thick wrists.
I never heard of Cure. I got all my information from a little Asian man who called himself Chun. I met him on the plane.
The thick-wristed man spoke about a house of assassins in Asia before he silenced me.
Huh?
I was lecturing at Harvard when he approached me. He told me that I had stumbled upon the truth. It was a secret shadow government that enforced its will through assassination and black operations. It was called Cure, he said. It was headed by a man named Smith, he said. I had been right all along. My film CIA was closer to the truth than even I dreamed. And then he did something to me. I lost my mind. My memory. I wandered the streets of Cambridge for over a year, living out of garbage cans and the coins people dropped into my paper cup until a film student recognized me and called my agent. A brain operation unblocked my memory. I remembered that I was Hardy Bricker, but I also remembered what the man with the thick wrists had done to me. And I vowed to expose him and the evil racist fascist infra-organization that controlled him.
By killing the president?
I'd been away from the Hollywood scene for over a year. People forget. I needed a hit. Besides, I didn't kill anybody personally.
But he's the president of the United States.
The bastard sold out the film industry during those GATT talks a year ago. All of Hollywood felt betrayed.
GATT?
General Agreement on Trade and Tariffs. The French were holding out for concessions that protected their shitty little artsy-fartsy film industry against big-budget U.S. films. The president swore up and down he wouldn't cave in, but he did. A world leader who can't stand up for his own nation's chief entertainment industry doesn't deserve to live.
So, who killed the president?
Who? Who? Don't you get it? The shooters don't even know. That's the beauty of this. Nobody knows the big picture. Everybody has their role, but nobody on the inside knows what's going on. Even the people in the fucking loop are out of the loop. I have craftspeople who think they're building prop replicas for one picture I have in development. I have a talent agency recruiting the doubles. I have a quack Mexican doctor putting the animal brain centers into the doubles.
Excuse me?
It's a French technique, actually, discovered back in the 80s. You drill a hole in someone's skull, introduce cells taken from other animals that control certain instinctive behaviors into the brain, and they lie dormant until the alien cells are activated by inhaled steroids. They did it with animals at first, quails that crow like roosters because they think they are roosters, dogs that quack, lions that think they can fly. Those ones don't live very long. I have a pet monkey that moves like a cow. They're called chimeras. It's the latest pet fad on the coast. I just adapted the idea to people. My Gila Gingold thought he was an alligator. The Thrush Limburger double thought he was a rogue elephant. He wasn't. But between his 300-pound body and the adrenaline kick from the steroids, he might as well have been.
This is insane! You assassinated the president just so you could make a movie?
Hardy Bricker looked injured.
Actually, it's a docudrama. I had everything taped by crews who were pretending to be news crews. All that tape you supplied will be a big help. Once it's cut together, over my narration, my version of events is the one that will go down in the history books. The president will go down as a martyr for health care. If it all holds together, who knows? Universal health coverage should become law by the time I'm giving my next Academy Award speech.
Not where you're going, pal.
Pepsi looked up. From behind a hedge stepped a man in a black t-shirt and chinos. He had very thick wrists and the deadest eyes in the world, and they were looking at Hardy Bricker with cold rage. Bricker whipped his .22 target pistol from his topcoat and lined it up.
That's far enough.
But the man kept advancing. Bricker fired 5 consecutive shots, and every one seemed to miss. The man with the dead eyes kept on coming. Bricker aimed very carefully, and since the man was in no particular hurry, only fired when the length of a human body separated them. This time, Pepsi saw the man sidestep the bullet. He simply stepped out of its path and back into place like a ballet dancer performing a minor exercise. The edges of his body blurred, indicating incredible speed, but otherwise, it seemed to execute the maneuver with casual nonchalance. Hardy Bricker squeezed off one more shot. The thick-wristed man reached up and relieved Hardy Bricker of his pistol. Finger skin came away with the weapon. Bricker started backing away. From behind Pepsi, the tiny figure she knew as Chun stepped up and impaled Bricker's back with a single deadly fingernail.
You're not gonna kill me! You can't! I'm a major, major player in the film industry!
I should have wasted you the first time.
I don't wanna die!
Tough.
This isn't in the script!
Screw the script, this is real life. And for you, it's about to come to a sudden end.
Look, look, I can put you in my movie. You'll be famous.
I'm already in the movie.
We can be in the movie together. I promise you, you won't end up on the cutting room floor. You have my word as a child of the 60s.
Remo, I weary of this man's prattle.
Just a sec. Bricker, who else knows about Cure?
Just her. You're going to have to kill her too.
Not true. I only know about RX, and I don't really know about that.
We'll get to you later. I got an idea. You're gonna confess your crimes to the world.
Never! It'll spoil the film and wreck the healthcare thing.
Little father, see if there's a video camera in that car.
A moment later, the master of Shinanju returned, carrying a video camera. Remo lifted it to his shoulder and started taping Hardy Bricker.
Start confessing. Just leave out the stuff about Cure and Smith and us.
I refuse!
The master of Shinanju stepped up, and all the resolve drained out of Hardy Bricker's quaking body. He began confessing. He spoke in exhaustive detail, adding things he had not told before. Remo stopped him at one point.
Who was the Oswald double?
A has-been actor. He built a career out of playing Lee Harvey Oswald in a string of made-for-TV movies back in the 70s. When he got too old for the part, he just lost it. Started believing he was Oswald. Changed his name to Alec James Hiddell. He was an extra in CIA. He was the only one I didn't have to drill a hole in his skull before I sent him after the president. Let me tell you, when he read the script, he couldn't wait to take a shot at the president.
He was willing to kill the president to be in your movie?
Docudrama! And he knew he was shooting a Secret Service decoy. If we killed the president before the credits, we'd have no movie. He was the only one besides me who knew what was going on. That's the beauty of it. We had a conspiracy involving literally thousands of people, just like I theorized in CIA.
and it all held together.
Until now. Did he know he was going to be killed by a ruby double?
Well, that was a later revision. I never got around to showing him that draft.
When Hardy Bricker was through, he was on his knees sobbing before the eternal flame of the president whose memory he had invoked and defiled.
Now it's time for you to commit suicide.
The gun is empty. You can't make me shoot myself with an empty gun.
Good thinking. Besides, if I did that, it would go on the books as a simple suicide. I don't want a simple suicide. I want something for the conspiracy buffs to chew on for the next 200 years. Maybe that way they'll stop messing with history.
A thick-wristed hand reached down and made one of Hardy Bricker's limp hands into a fist. Remo brought the fist up to the right side of Bricker's throbbing temple. He pulled the index finger out, setting the tip against Bricker's head.
Well, shouldn't you at least be filming this?
Why?
It's the end of the movie.
Only for you, pal.
And while everyone watched with furrowing brows, including the owner of the finger, Remo gave Hardy Bricker's wrist a sharp inward push. The index finger plunged into Bricker's soft brain all the way up to the third joint. Bricker's right eye bugged out of its socket. His entire body shook. But he didn't attempt to extract his finger from his brain. He couldn't. Neither was working anymore. They left Hardy Bricker kneeling at the eternal flame, where he would be later found, the first human being in recorded history to commit suicide by ramming his index finger into his own skull. A mystery for the ages, never to be solved. Later, Remo and Chun were walking through Arlington National Cemetery with Pepsi in tow.
Was all that cretin said true, Remo?
Yeah. I heard Bricker was in town, and I was sick of all those movies of his where he blamed every bad thing that ever happened in the world on American government conspiracies. I figured if I put him out to pasture, that would be the end of his propaganda campaign. I never told Smitty.
Emperor Smith will be displeased. Even more displeased than he is over my slip of the tongue where this unimportant woman is concerned.
Look, I need Smith to help find my parents. He can't know about this.
Nor will he. Provided certain persons show certain other persons proper gratitude according to the season.
Just name your price.
I will.
Chun regarded Pepsi with narrow eyes.
Once we are through with unimportant details.
Remo and Chun loaded Pepsi Dobbins into the borrowed police car.
What happens to me?
The same thing that happened to Bricker the first time.
What happened to him the first time?
A long-nailed hand the color of old ivory drifted up to Pepsi Dobbins' shoulder and squeezed once. She instantly forgot the question. Then her mind went dark. Just before the coming of total darkness, she heard a voice.
This time I will do it, and no one will undo it.
When Pepsi woke up, she was sleeping in the back seat of a police car parked outside of the ANC Washington News Bureau, and, head in a fog, she stumbled into the building. Her news director found her wandering the halls.
There you are. Where have you been?
Oh, hi, Greg. I think I've been in a daze.
That's the understatement of the turn of the century. Better sit down.
Pepsi sat. The bare floor was not as comfortable as she'd hoped.
Do you want the good news first or the bad?
What's the good?
The president's not dead.
Isn't that the bad news?
No.
Okay, so what's the bad?
CNN is showing a tape found at Kennedy's grave where they found that wacko film director, Hardy Bricker, dead with his finger in his brain.
Huh?
He committed suicide, though no one can figure out how. He was behind everything.
It's bad that we lost the story, right?
It's worse that we declared the president dead twice in 48 hours. I've been fired, and the only reason I haven't left the building is that I had something to do first.
What's that?
Firing you.
Oh.
Pepsi Dobbins still didn't get it all, but one day she would. In the White House basement command post, Harold Smith watched the confession of Academy Award-winning Hollywood director Hardy Bricker on CNN. It was being shown for the fourth time.
Incredible. It was all a film. No wonder the president was not killed outright the first time. There wouldn't be a story otherwise.
Smith turned in his chair to face Remo and Chun.
You did an excellent job, from identifying Bricker as the mastermind to dealing with the Pepsi Dobbins problem.
Actually, Chun deserves most of the credit.
I taught him everything he knows.
And Cura's off the hook now that Bricker confessed that RX did in fact symbolize the medical community he was trying to frame, along with Congressman Gingold and Thrush Limburger, among others.
Another mission successfully completed, and another president saved. All in the line of duty.
The Secret Service has confiscated the tapes found in Bricker's hotel room.
That ties up that loose end.
There is only one thing.
Remo and Chun looked blank.
The script. They could find no trace of it.
Oh, that. Bricker had it on him.
Where is it now?
I gave it to Chun.
Master Chun?
Pah, I threw it away.
Why? It was evidence.
It was the most inept script I ever read. I was not even mentioned.
Harold Smith looked blank. They stared at one another, all equally blank.
Ahem. Now that the threat to the president is suppressed, it is time we left the White House the way we came in.
Like thieves in the night?
Security. And we have much to do, starting with locating Uncle Sam Beasley, who is still at large.
No, starting with finding my parents.
I will do my best.
At a careful distance, they followed Harold Smith to the basement boiler room and the secret tunnel to the Treasury building.
Remember, you promised never to tell Smith that I was the one who set Bricker off.
You will bear that burden to the end of your days.
Okay, I'll bear it, but mum's the word.
And you, in return, will cook every meal for the next 3,000 years.
You said 2,000.
I am including your afterlife in the Christian Place of Atonement. I will visit you there often when we are both dead.
I'm sure I'll appreciate the company.
Just remember to steam the rice, not boil it like a lazy white.
For the next 2,000 years or in the afterlife?
Both.
They entered the tunnel under the White House.
Merry Feast of the Pig, little father.
The same to you, Counter Schmuck.
The Destroyer, Target of Opportunity is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2006, The Cutting Corporation. Performed by Christopher Graybill, Terrence Aselford, Nanette Savard, Richard Rowan, Thomas Penny, Jeff Baker, David Coyne, Ken Jackson, Casey Jones, Kate Torrey, Christopher Walker, Nathaniel Perry, Dan Smith, Christian Parent, Chris Rowan, Bobby Aselford, and Mort Shelby. Directed by Nanette Savard. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Vocal editing by Nathaniel Perry and Greg Reinfeld. Graphic audio sound design by Nathaniel Perry, Johann Detweiler, Greg Reinfeld, and Chris Rowan. The Destroyer theme was composed by Mark Ashby. Additional original music by Matt Webb and Nathaniel Perry. Script adapted for graphic audio by Nanette Savard. If you enjoyed The Destroyer, be sure to look for James Axler's Outlanders, available at roadstops everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.cuttingaudio.com. Keep listening for exciting previews of other graphic audio thrillers.
The following previews are of graphic audio productions rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
After their questionable resolution of the crisis on the planet Loki, Jack Random and Ruby Journey return to Golgotha and are summoned to an angry parliament.
I hanged a bunch of people who needed hanging. They were all guilty, all dirty. All politicians.
When they arrive, they find the war against humanity going badly for the Empire on all fronts. And now, the dreaded recreated have come from beyond the unknown territory of the Dark Void.
We can't stop them! Hell, they're smashing through us like we're not even here!
But the first order of business for Jack Random
is to deal with the evil he sees within the Empire itself.
I'm going to kill everyone who denies the people of the freedom I promised them. Starting with everyone in this room.
In a vicious strike that will brand him a monster in the eyes of many, including the one he holds most dear.
Parliament will authorize an extraordinarily high ransom for his head.
How extraordinary.
Name your price.
Deathstalker Destiny, Episode 2, Burning Bridges.
Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar.
In the Middle East, there are those who call for mercy, justice, and deliverance from the grasp of power-starved madmen. Madmen who are ambitious and armed with biochemical agents and just enough fundamental knowledge to be dangerous. The United Islamic Front and Lashkar Jihad combine forces to create an acid rain of terror from which you can run, but you can't breathe.
What, they want to dump the pesticides into clouds? Sounds pretty lame.
DDT?
Check.
Heptachlor?
Check.
Dildrin?
Check.
They want to do like the World Trade Center. They want to fly the plane into the parliament while it is in session.
Fuel. Main tanks?
Check.
Bladders?
Check.
Pump switches?
Check.
But would they really do such a thing? The smoke would affect them as much as it would anyone else. And if their fellow Muslims start falling, what kind of support would they have for their cause?
Are we clear for takeoff?
Clear.
Tawakkaltu ala Allah. I put my trust in Allah.
Mac Bolan and his Stony Man team have an answer for those who would infect the world with virulent terror. From the jungles of Samarkand, the busy streets of Jakarta, and into the belly of the beast itself, Mac Bolan will take the fight onto their turf and deliver his own violent antidote. Don't miss one pulse-pounding minute of Mac Bolan number 94, Pressure Point.
The only good cell is an empty cell.
In the savage, lawless terrain of the Outlands, deadly threats are everywhere. Cain discovers that one of the greatest dangers he ever faced originated 100 years before he was born.
And how is our passenger holding up?
Still sleeping. God knows how.
God Almighty has little to do with this journey, does he?
An unholy pact between mankind and beings from beyond culminates in the sacrifice of one victim's innocence only hours before the nuke cost itself.
No! No!
Centuries later, Cain and his crew are given a most dangerous task, one far outside the realm of the explainable. All the advanced technology at their disposal will prove useless in a country steeped in the supernatural.
You're not asking for much, are you? Jump to England, somehow get to Ireland, hook your doodad up to a quantum vortex, see what happens, and then come back. Simple.
You're under no obligation to accept these missions. However, we cannot afford to wait for the Directorate to find us. Therefore, our only chance of survival is to develop a way of slipping in an unguarded backdoor.
Across the ocean, Cain finds too many questions, and a despot hell-bent on creating his own answers.
The complete pacification of Ireland and mastery of the forces bottled up therein. I, for one, will not allow humankind to return to a lumbering, barbaric clan, praying to John Barleycorn to make the crops grow. She is the conduit between the hyperdimensional gateways. Until she is killed or subdued, humanity is not safe.
And the woman at the heart of Cain's mission, lost in the eye of the storm, may very well be Cain's soulmate. Don't miss 1 minute of Outlanders number 3, Savage Run.
If you can't find that hot graphic audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.